Welcome to the Sister Speak True Blood podcast, where we discuss everything about the HBO series True Blood from a sister's point of view. I'm Sister J.
And I'm Sister K. And welcome to episode 22. Let's get started.
Okay.
All right. Well, I will be doing the recap today on True Blood episode 32, titled Night on the Sun. We start the episode with Sookie waking up from her coma. She sees Bill and starts screaming bloody murder. Tara, Alcee, Lafayette, and Jason are all sleeping on the side of her bed, and they all jump up to go to her bedside and see that Bill's standing there. Alcee grabs Bill and tells him to back off, and Bill tells Alcee to just let him go, leave him alone. Sookie asks everyone to leave so that she could talk to Bill alone, and Tara is real upset about that and tells her, no way, he's the one that almost killed you. Lafayette tells everyone to get out, let her go ahead and have her time, and he kind of ushers everyone out of the room. Bill tells Sookie that he didn't mean to hurt her, but he couldn't stop, and he can't take back what he's done. Sookie tells him that she doesn't know if she can forgive him because it's just been too much. Bill tells her, well, I really don't want to be forgiven, and I can't take anything that I've done back. She tells him it's been a long, bloody fight since the day they met, and she wanted them to be happy and be a normal couple, but it's not ever going to happen. Bill says that he wants her to have all that, children, growing old with someone, laying in the sun, but he can't give it to her. He tells her that he loves her and will forever, and then she tells him that she loves him too. He takes the IV that he was filtering his blood to her out and tells her to be safe and leaves the room crying with his blood tears. Sookie then starts crying and sobbing, lays back down on the bed, and the camera pans down to the IV dripping blood on the floor. So after the credits, we go to Mississippi and see King Russell and Talbot arguing. Talbot is real upset because he says that Russell did not tell him that Queen Sophie Anne was going to be moving in with them. And you can see all the little guards taking all of her crap up the stairs, and she's screaming down the stairs that this room isn't bigger than a closet where she's going to put all her birds. And she's still screaming for Hadley. Russell is telling him that they just acquired a state of Louisiana and he should be excited and happy. Talbot runs down all the reasons why he is not excited. He says Franklin's brains aren't washing out of the guest room linens. He had to bury werewolves under the gazebo. And Sookie staked Lorena. Russell tells Talbot that he is happy, that he is safe, and that's all that matters to him. Meanwhile, while they're doing all this talking in the middle of the atrium of the house, Eric is kind of standing by looking at him, watching and seeing what they talk about. Talbot is still upset and tells Russell that these are just words. And Russell tells Talbot, well, you know what? Things might be getting complicated soon because I acted a little impulsively while I was in Louisiana. He tells Talbot that he killed the magister. And Talbot gets real upset and tells him that the authority will never stand for it. Russell tells him, F the authority. He doesn't care. And he's made sure that there's nothing that they can tell. There's nothing to prove that he did it. And that he also sent a $500,000 check to the AVL to help him with their stupid vampire rights amendment. Eric kind of butts in at this point and tells the king that there is a werebitch in his study. So Talbot kind of rolls his eyes and says, well, I'll take care of the queen. You go take care of your other business. Or I'll take care of your wife. You go take care of your other business. So he walks into the study and he's like, what's up, pumpkin? His little southern voice. And Debbie's crying and looking crazy and tells him that Cooter's dead. And he's like, oh, I know. He says, well, you know what? He died a hero. And she says, he wasn't no hero. He is just trying to get him some V. Just trying to get hot. She tells Russell that she wants to hunt them all down and rip their heads off. And Russell's laughing. He says, I like your spunk. I like your fire. He asks Eric what he thinks. And Eric says, well, you know, I'm all for a good head ripping. But I think we should consider the heads that are going to be ripped. And King Russell says, you mean the Sookie Stackhouse? And Eric's like, yeah, you know, she is valuable, so you might want to, you know, keep her to yourself. Debbie is like, oh, well, she slept with my boyfriend and made him, my ex-boyfriend, and made him kill my new boyfriend. And the king says, well, but you know what? She's special, so we just going to let it go. He said, I'll let you have a piece of her when it's your turn. And she seems happy with that. He kind of shoos her out of the room and tells her to go. Eric tells the king that it might not be a good idea to bring Sookie into the situation because she's human and not to be trusted because she has human emotions. The king says, well, she is special and has special things, powers, and he might need that as leverage because of this new situation. The king, Eric is still kind of protesting when the king runs up on him real quick in his vampire speed and asks him if he can trust Eric since he actually turned on the queen. Eric tells him that he's actually been looking for him for 1,000 years and he kind of kneels down on his knees to show homage to the king and tells him that he's been waiting for a true leader to unite them all. He said that he thought that it was his maker, Godric, but Godric was weak and didn't have what it took. But after seeing how the king killed the magister, he knows that the king's the right person to follow, the right vampire. He tells the king to give him a chance to show him how deep his loyalty runs. And the king just kind of looks at him and seems kind of pleased by all this. The next scene, we see Arlene and Terry laying in bed. And Terry is kind of laying on her stomach singing to the baby, singing Hush Little Baby. And it's kind of cute. And he goes through each little line separately. And when he gets to when Papa's going to buy Mama a diamond ring, she says, yeah. Or Papa's going to buy you a diamond ring. She says, yeah, when's Papa going to buy Mama one? So she kind of has her eyes closed and she's kind of stroking his hair while he keeps singing. And the camera pans down to showing his arm, and the voice changes, and it turns into Renee's Cajun draw voice. And Arlene screams, is kind of bad, and says, you died, you were killed, and you got buried. And he says, well, nothing's going to keep me from my baby boo. He got my blood running through his veins, and he says, he's going to take up where his daddy left off. So she's looking all scared, and he grabs her by the neck. She starts screaming. The next thing we see, Terry is saying, Arlene, Arlene, baby, baby, wake up, wake up. And she kind of looks at him and says, you was dreaming, baby. And she kind of, I love that little line and the way he said it. She kind of hugs him and cries because now she's real freaked out about it being Renee's baby. We see Jessica and Bill. Bill back at home, and Jessica is hugging him and telling him that she never thought she'd miss him, but she really did, and that there's a lot of stuff she needs to tell him, and she hopes that he doesn't get mad when he interrupts her and tells her that she needs to pack a bag quickly and go because there's no time. She asks him where they're going, and he says that they're not going anywhere where she is, that she needs to go. He tells her that he releases her, and she's looking at him like, what does that mean? He says, well, you're free to go. You're not bound to me anymore as your maker. He tells her that she can't stay with him, and she gets real upset and tells him she has nowhere else to go and that she drained someone by accident and that she needs him and she's not going anywhere. He yells at her that he can't take care of her or protect her and he's not good for her, and she tells him that she's not good either. And she's not leaving, and of course, by this point, she's real upset and crying on the couch and tells him that she doesn't want to be alone anymore. So Bill kind of walks up to try to comfort her, and they kind of hug each other while she's crying. We next see Alcide and Sookie sitting on her couch, and he is telling her that he is, you know, not planning. She tells him that he can leave if he wants to, and he tells her, no, I'm not leaving you alone right now. No, not after everything that's happened. She offers him her guest room and kind of looks kind of sad. And he tells her, well, one day it's not going to hurt so bad. And she says, well, is that what you keep telling yourself about Debbie? About this time, Jason and Annie come busting in the house. And Jason's wanting her to press charges against Bill because he thinks it was domestic something, what Bill did to her. Annie kind of says, well, she of course says, no, she's not going to... press charges because he just did what was in his nature. And Aussie said, well, that's no excuse for what he did. Andy says, well, if you change your mind, we can always get a restraining order or something like that. And Jason's upset and says, hell no, a restraining order is not good enough. He wants Bill put in jail. He tells Sookie that if Bill comes near her again, he's going to kill him. Sookie gets kind of upset, and Andy is telling Jason he's not going to kill anybody. And at this point, Sookie hears Jason and Andy both kind of talking in their minds about he's already killed someone, and he's got to be keep it quiet cause, so it doesn't come out that he did kill someone. So she starts asking Jason what did he do, and he kind of shuts his mind off and says, that is rude, you're not supposed to do that to me, and he's going to leave the house. She yells after him not to do anything stupid because she can't take it anymore. Any more drama. And he walks out of the house. We see Lafayette and Tara. And Tara's on the bed and he's rubbing her feet. And she's kind of just staring off into space. And he's asking her if she wants to talk to him about what happened to her. She tells him maybe someday, but she just can't at that point. He says, well, Hooker, I just want to know, do you have a death wish or not? Because he's still thinking about her trying to kill herself before. She tells him no, that she fought hard, real hard to survive, and that she's going to be okay. And he says, well, you can stay here with me as long as you want to. We next see Sam in the rental house that he let the Mickens live in, drinking some coffee on the couch, and all of a sudden he starts sniffing the air like he smells something. He gets up off the couch, goes to the door, and looks out the window and sees this big, dopey-looking dog sitting on the porch. It was so cute.
It was a mastiff.
So cute. He opens the door, and when he does, Melinda Mickens transforms back into her body and stands up all butt-naked. He ushers her into the house real quick and tells her to hurry up before somebody sees her. She packs a bag, or actually it's a big-ass suitcase, and Sam tells her that she is not welcome back there anymore, ever again, her or Jolie. She tells them that she doesn't blame him and that she loves them and knows that Jolie is no good, but that he's her husband and their father. She gives Tommy a kiss on the cheek and tells Sam to take good care of him and himself, and she starts to walk out the door with her big old suitcase. She tells Sam if he wants to help, he could give him some money because Jolie spent all theirs on the fight. He gets into his wallet and gives her what he has, and she looks at it like, this is not going to get us far. And he says, I don't give a fuck where it takes you. Just get the hell out. Mm-hmm. Which was kind of rough, but he was through.
Yeah.
At this point, Tommy, he slams the door shut, and Tommy's on the sitting down kind of crying. Probably, you know, well, for two reasons. One, Sam just cussed his mama out. And the other, he's sad that it has come to this point because he does love his mama, even though he doesn't agree with everything. We see Tara in the shower washing up and looks like she's starting to have some fun washing up when all of a sudden we see Russell coming up from the bottom of the shower and his little fangs coming out. They start kissing, and she looks like she's getting all into it when all of a sudden she wakes up and she's on the bed looking all scared like she done had a nightmare. So she's having one of them sex fever dreams from the blood. We see Lafayette walking to his front door. He's coming back home. And he's trying to unlock his front door when all of a sudden this Buddha statue comes sailing through the air to him. He jumps back, and it's Ruby Jean yelling at the statue saying, hey, now you can fly. How you like that? He asks her how she got out of the hospital and what she's doing there. She tells him that she's there to protect him because they're coming for him. He's like, well, who's coming for me? What you talking about? She says, the vampires, witches, dogs, and cats. And she has got to, and that she is going to be okay because she is there for him now. She's hugging him, and he's rolling his eyes like, oh, Lord, she done really went off. we see Sookie sunbathing in her yard, and she's kind of crying. And Tara comes up and lays down with her, and they start holding hand and hold her hand. They talk a little bit about Sookie was always sunbathing and how Gran would always be telling her to put on her sunscreen so she wouldn't fry like a bacon in a pan. That was kind of cute. Tara asks her if she's going to go back to Bill again. And Sookie says that, you know, she's not sure, but she knew he was dangerous, and that was part of why she fell in love with him. Tara tells her that Bill gave her his blood before the first date, and that's probably how she... And he probably glamored her into falling in love with him. Sookie tells her that glamour didn't work on her, and she just can't turn her heart off so quickly. Tara tells her she sounds like an old country song where the dumb bitch gets killed in the end. And so Sookie's like, you call me a dumb bitch? And Tara says, well, you are if you think you can go back to him and survive. Tara tells her that his eyes look just like Franklin's, cold and, what'd she say? Not deadly. Crazy. Cold and crazy. Sookie tells Tara that she doesn't want to fight. She could tell Tara's in a lot of pain and asks her if she wants to talk about it. Tara jumps up real quick and tells her, oh no, you don't want to know what's going on in my head. At this point, Alcide walks up and says hello to Tara and starts staring at Sookie while she's in her little bathing suit. And Tara says, oh yeah, go flirt some sense into her because she ain't listening to no reason. And so Sookie and, Alcide kind of look at each other. We next see Jason in his house grabbing some bullets and ammunition from his little Fellowship of the Sun kit that he got when Crystal starts banging on his door. He lets her in. She's all wet and tells him that she needs his truck. She's all kind of frantic. He asks her if she swam there, and she said, well, yeah, because that's the only way they wouldn't be able to track me and get my scent. She tells him that she had nowhere else to go, and, you know, she just needs his truck and maybe some whiskey. So he gets her a towel, and she gets on the couch, and she's telling Jason that she's been promised to Felton, her fiancé, since she was 4 years old, and he hit her, because she has a big old black eye, because she told him that she wasn't going to marry him. Jason's kind of pleased by this, that she's not going to marry him, and she's not engaged anymore, and tells her that he really likes her. He doesn't know what it is, but he really likes her, and he feels something when he's around her. She tells him that she really needs to go. He kisses her and tells her that he can handle himself, and she's basically just telling him she's worried about what her family will do to him, and he's like, I can take care of myself. And so they keep on kissing and end up having sex on the couch. After they get done, they're talking, and she tells him that she's never had a job other than cooking meth. And she doesn't know what she's going to do, but eventually they're going to find them and kill Jason. He tells her that is not going to happen. They're together now, and he's not going to let anything take them apart. He tells her to go relax, take a hot bath, and he'll be back after getting them some food. So he runs out the house. We go back to Merlot's, and Tara is at work stalking when she pulls a True Blood out of a box and kind of gets spooked, remembering when Franklin came into Merlot's and ordered the True Blood. She drops the bottle and it shatters and spills all over her shoes, and so she starts cussing and goes into the back room to clean them off. About this time, we also see Arlene interviewing a new waitress named Holly, who is real strange looking. And she's cute, but she's strange looking. Mm-hmm. And I think it's her eyebrows. I don't know. And Arlene is telling her, well, you'll really like working here. Don't let anybody tell you different, but this is a great place to work. And she just comes out and says, you mean about all the dead waitresses? She's like, well, look, I can't be choosy. I got two kids, so I need a job and I can't be choosy. Arlene's like, oh, well, I have two kids too, Colby and Lisa. And then Holly just looks at her and goes, and another one on the way, huh? What you gonna name that one? And Arlene just looks at her and says, how did you know that? And before she can answer, Sam comes into the bar and is saying, hey, Arlene, what you doing? And Arlene says, well, this is our new waitress, Holly, and don't sleep with her. And Sam just kind of keeps on walking like, okay. So Sam goes to the back where Tara is cleaning off her shoes, and she's all upset. He puts his hand on her shoulder, and she starts screaming and hollering and looking all crazed in the eye and like she's about to fall apart. Well, he's like, what's going on? What's the matter? And he hugs her, and she starts really breaking down and crying, which is good that she can actually do it and get it out. So we next go back to Lafayette's house, and Ruby Jean has done barricaded the front door, and there's somebody at the front door. She's like, don't let him in, don't let him in. He's like, oh, it's fine, it's fine. They are not coming for me, I know. So he takes all the crap that she's done piled up against the door off, opens it, and it's Jesus. And he's telling, and she's like, oh, Jesus. She is so funny. Anyway, he says, Ruby Jean, people have been worried about you. And, oh, she was so funny with the line that she said we could talk about later. So Lafayette tells Jesus to come in. And Ruby Jean says, well, I got to go to the bathroom. So Lafayette and Jesus are talking. And he's like, you know, Jesus says, you know, I'm sorry. We had a new nurse. This will not happen again. And Lafayette tells him, it better not for how much I'm paying them to keep her. He said, I wanted to call you instead of the police. And he kind of stops talking. And Jesus says, because that would probably be cramp your style with you selling the and all. At this point, Ruby Jean comes out the back with a big old butcher knife and tells them that she is not going back. She says she does not like the drugs they give her and that she cannot go back there. She tells Lafayette, who she calls Lala or La, that he has a power and that's why they're coming for him, and she can't protect him as she's all drugged. Jesus tells her that she's right. Lafayette is very special and powerful, and that he is not going to let anybody hurt him. He tells her to go to give her him the knife so that they can go ahead and start watching TV. She just turns the knife on over to him and says, okay, where's the clicker at? Let's watch TV. And he hands the knife off to Lafayette, and Lafayette's kind of looking at him like, how did he do that? So the next scene, we're back at the mansion in Mississippi, and we see Hadley dressed in some lingerie coming out of a bedroom with some fang marks on her, so we know she came out of Sophie Ann's room, probably. She's walking down the hall when Eric snatches her up and tells her he has a message for her to take to her cousin. She tells him she hasn't seen Sookin. She starts to tell him that she hasn't seen her in so many years. When he puts his hand over her mouth again and tells her, look, you tell her what I need you to tell her, word for word and nothing else. So the next scene we see all seated Sookie on Sookie's porch, and he's on the phone with Janice, his sister, where she's told him that Debbie and some wares have burned her beauty salon down and that he has to go help take care of it. He tells her that she should come with him, and she's like, no, I'm not going to run. I'm not going to run anymore. I'm through with that. And he tells her, you know, she needs to make sure she has someone there with her to stay and help her if somebody ever comes for her. She tells him that Bill will come if she needs help. And if she knew it was best for her, she would have fallen for a guy like him. And he says, back at you. They kind of look at each other, and he tells her to take care of herself. They have a big old long hug, and then she tells him to come see her sometime. Back to see her. We're back at Merlot's, and Hoyt comes in, and this is about nighttime by now. Hoyt comes into Merlot's and asks Tommy if Jessica's working that night. Tommy tells him to just give it up, and Jessica is done with him, and she's going to get her a real man. And Hoyt's like, what the hell is your problem? And Tommy starts arguing back with him and tells him, you want to take this shit outside? And Hoyt's like, yeah, come on, little man. When Sam stops both of them and says, Tara, give Hoyt a drink on the house. Tommy, you come with me. He takes Tommy to the back office to talk to him and tells him, look, you need to change your MO. This is a new life for you now. You need to change how you're doing stuff. Merlot's was my dream. You need to find your own dream. Maybe go to make some money, go to college, figure out what you want to do. Tommy just looks at him and goes, man, you really don't know me at all, and walks off. And Sam's looking kind of dumbfounded by all that. We go back to Bill's house, and him and Jessica are moving real fast, or he's showing her how to fight and run with werewolves, because werewolves are really quick. She asks him why he isn't with Sookie, And he tells her it's over with for them, that they're no longer together. He tells her that he does love her, which is why he has to let her go. She says, well, then you need to be with her. And he kind of looks sad and says, well, it's just, you know, it's over for us. She tells him that she loves Hoyt, but he is too good and sweet for her. Bill looks at her and says he's sorry. And she says, yeah, it sucks. And they kind of look at each other with the same, they're both going through the same thing. We see Sookie looking through a scrapbook of her and Bill, which basically is just one picture. And she flashes back to when he almost kills her in the back of the truck and looks through the rest of this empty scrapbook when she hears a noise. She grabs her shotgun, turns around, and it's Hadley coming in the house. And she's like, oh, Hadley, and they hug. And Hadley's looking around saying, hey, where's Gran? Where's Gran at? And so, Sookie has to tell her Gran is gone. So the next scene we see, Hadley's crying at the table, says, you know, I should have come back. I should have contacted her after I left that rehab that she paid for. And, you know, so Sookie's telling her, well, where have you been? What have you been doing? She's like, well, I didn't, you know, come here for this. I came to give you a message from Eric Northman. Sookie's asking her, you know, what do you know about Eric? And she says, well, the message is that she needs to leave because the King of Mississippi is after her and not to trust Bill. And Sookie's like, and I'm supposed to trust Eric? And Hadley just kind of cries and says, that's all I can do. I have to go. And Sookie's trying to find out, you know, how she's involved with all that. And Hadley tells her, I hope you can forgive me someday. I am so sorry. And as she leaves, Sookie hears her voice, her thoughts, telling her that she told them about Sookie and that's why they want her. Talbot, we see Talbot and the King, and he tells King Russell that, or he is upset with King Russell that he's leaving again and never spends time with him and never takes Talbot anywhere. The King is like, look, you have a mansion full of stuff, all the little vampire boys you want, and you still aren't happy. Talbot's mad, and he goes over to King Russell's little cabinet with all his little collectibles and starts breaking them up. And the King is just kind of sitting there going, yeah, whatever. And Eric's there too, saying, okay. Well, when he gets to the Swedish crown of Eric's dad, Eric flies over there real quick and stops him from smashing it and says, might I have a suggestion? He says, why don't I stay here? I know I'm a poor substitute, but why don't I stay here and keep Talbot company? And Talbot's like, eh, whatever. And King Russell's like, you know, I am really jealous that you're going to be able to do that. And then Talbot's like, okay, let's do it. Because he, you know, he wants to get a reaction out of the King. Eric says, I'll do it. And then when Talbot's back is turned, the King kind of mouths thank you to Eric and leaves to go handle his business. We go back to Merlot's, and Sam's doing something at the bar when he suddenly starts sniffing the air again, turns around and sees Calvin and Felton from Hotshot coming into the bar. So apparently there's something. That's how, I guess not our first inclination, but one of the first things that we realize there's something. They're looking for Crystal. So Sam says, can I help you? And they're like, yeah, I'm looking for my daughter. She's blonde. Her name's Crystal, blah, blah. Sam says, well, I haven't seen anybody like that here, but you ain't welcome here. You need to go. At this point, Tommy comes up and is like, what's going on? Because he could smell him too. And Felton's like, well, I know she was here because she took my truck and the truck's in your parking lot. They start getting kind of ugly. And so Tommy starts saying, well, look, he done told you we don't know nothing. Sam tells Tommy, you know, just let it go, Tommy, let it go. And Felton says, yeah, Tommy, let it go, let it go. Kind of mocking him. But they do end up leaving the bar. Sam turns to Tommy as they walk off and say, did you smell that? And Tommy's like, yeah, I did. And so they both have smelt it. We go back to Lafayette's house, and Jesus is on the phone with the hospital explaining that Ruby Jean's going to stay at Lafayette's, and Lafayette tells him that she is asleep. Jesus warns him about getting caught up in selling drugs and V and getting into dark things because of the power that he does have, it could turn him, easily turn on him if he does. Lafayette's trying to kind of explain why he does some of the things he does when Jesus just grabs him and they start kissing and they get it out. We go back to the mansion in Mississippi and we see Talbot and Eric playing chess. It looks like pretty quickly Eric has checkmated Talbot, and there's some guards in the room too. So they didn't trust Eric too much, I guess, if they had guards in the room. So Talbot gets mad and he looks bored and he just throws all the pieces on the floor and says, "I'm bored, take off your clothes." So Eric is kind of looking around at the guards and saying, "Can we have some privacy first?" And so Talbot tells him to leave. Eric starts stripping down to his skivvies and it was nice. And so Talbot is looking at him like, "Ooh, yeah, come on with it." And they start kissing and getting it on. So everybody getting something. So we go back to Sookie in her room in her house, and she's got the shotgun looking out the window when she hears some werewolves calling each other. We see Debbie and two werewolves coming up to the door. She kicks. She comes into the front door and tells the werewolves to go either way. Bill starts running after one werewolf. Jessica starts going after another. And then Debbie starts going up the stairs towards Sookie. And she actually looks decent because she ain't all crazed on V and crying. She actually looks decent. Anyway, so while Bill and Jessica are fighting the werewolves, Sookie and Debbie are upstairs. And she's got the gun on her. But, of course, Debbie gets it from her. And they start having a real drag-out girl fight type fight. But it was serious. Sookie says, "Well, I've had some V," and Debbie says, "I have too." So they both going at it strong. Going back downstairs, we see Bill has already kind of taken care of his werewolf, and he's about to run up the stairs to Sookie because he can hear them fighting when Jessica starts chasing her werewolf out the door. Bill yells after her, "Stay in the house, Jessica," when he hears her scream. He turns around, goes outside, and sees that King Russell has caught Jessica and is holding her by her head and her neck, telling Bill, "Well, isn't this nice?" He says, "I'll trade you the red one for the blonde one." And Bill's saying, "Well, no, that's not a good trade. We just need to leave them out of it. Let's just handle this ourselves." So King Russell starts biting on Jessica's neck. She's hollering and screaming when Bill kind of taunts him and says, you are almost 3,000 years old and you hide behind guards, werewolves, and baby vampires. So that kind of gets the king and he's like, "Oh, you want to do this old school, huh?" So he lets Jessica go and tells the other wolf to go get her. So Jessica's kind of running off into the woods fast and she falls and she gets fast again. The werewolf's chasing her. And then at this point, King Russell runs up on Bill real quick. And they start kind of trying to tussle. Which, of course, Bill is no match for the king. And he throws Bill to the ground and puts his shoes against him. Because he's got some, iron spurs. Mm-hmm. Which starts burning, or silver spur, excuse me, that starts burning Bill's face. We go flashback to Eric and Talbot making out. And Eric tells Talbot to turn over. And Talbot says, "Yes, Daddy." And I would have said, "Yes, Daddy, too." And so while he turns over, he's all into it. Eric looks like he's all into it. He starts saying, "Well, Russell took my family from me, so I'm going to take his family from him." And as soon as he says that, Talbot kind of looks up and goes, "No." And Eric stakes him in the back. Russell, we go back to Russell, and he stops beating on Bill because he was really about to probably deal the death blow on Bill. And he looks up real quick and goes, "Talbot, no!" And he starts screaming and hollering and flies off. So we see that he can fly too. Mm-hmm. He flies off, which is really saves Bill's butt. So Bill runs over, runs back in the house, sees Sookie, and she sees him, throws the gun down. Oh, wait, I missed the part. While all that stuff was going on with Bill and the King, Sookie and Debbie was still fighting. And they was both knocking each other around. One was on top of the other. Finally, Sookie got a hold of some scissors and cut Debbie's face all up, which kind of made Debbie stop a little bit. And it gave Sookie a chance to get her gun and tells her she better leave or else she will shoot her. Debbie just says, "Yeah, I'll come back for you," and runs out the window and turns into the wolf and runs off into the woods. So after all that stuff happened with Bill and the King and Talbot and everything, Bill runs back in the house, finds Sookie, and she looks at him, and they both run to each other and say, "I love you, oh, I love you." Start kissing and making out and having sex. And that was the end of the episode.
Okay. Woo! That was a good episode.
That was a very good episode.
And, of course, the best scene, in my opinion, of the whole episode was the chick fight.
That was good.
I mean, Sookie was duking. She was duking.
That was just a good fight.
But that period. Debbie was, she was banging Sookie's head up against the floor. It was amazing.
And then the funniest part of the fight to me, or the best part of the fight, was when Sookie ran Debbie back up against the bed, mm-hmm. and then ran and jumped on her.
I know it.
I don't know why.
And she was just duking.
She wasn't shying away from
it. I know. That was good.
They were both going head to head, toe to toe.
Yeah, that was really good. But you know, I knew Eric was planning something, but I was shocked when he staked Talbot.
I was too.
I was shocked. That was the most shocking part of the whole episode, in my opinion. Because I love Talbot.
I like Talbot, too.
Man, I really like Talbot. So, I'm just,
I'm kind of upset because I like Talbot. I know why he did it. And, yeah. You know, that was just a perfect opening for him,
too. That was a perfect revenge for him, too.
Yeah. A perfect revenge.
Because he saw how much King Russell cared for Talbot. Mm-hmm. Because King Russell was, with all of his power and everything, he was reluctant to tell Talbot that he killed the Magister. Because Talbot's standing there, like, stamping his foot.
He's like, "What did you do? Spit it out."
Yeah, "What did you do?" You know. So that part was good, too.
That was good, too. And man. I like when he also said, "You're acting like a century-old child."
I know! I love Talbot, so now he's gone!
Yeah. And when the King felt it, and mm-hmm. he was like, "Oh, Talbot!" That was a good scene, too. That was really good. The emotion on his face, mm-hmm. he was like, "Ah!"
But he was kicking Bill's butt.
Oh, Bill would have died.
But, okay, well, let's go back on the fight part, though. I thought it was really, really good. Another great scene. Other than the chick fight, I think the other best scene of the whole episode was Bill and Jessica.
Yes.
Oh, I felt so bad for her.
When he was trying to rebuff her.
Dump her. But, I mean, he made her. And she said, "I don't know where to go." You know? Yeah. So the next time we see him, he's teaching her how to fight a werewolf because he knows they're coming.
Yeah.
See, he knows.
Well, you know, I like that scene because, you know, he's basically her father in all that. And she's telling him, you know, "I did something wrong. Don't be mad at me. But you never taught me, you know, what I'm supposed to do, how I'm supposed to do things.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be alone anymore. I don't have anywhere to go." And he really doesn't either.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of struck a chord in him. Because she's like, "I don't want to be alone." And he doesn't either. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that he started kind of teaching her how to do stuff.
Well, that's true.
He needs to. I mean, he can want her not to chomp people all he wants, but he sure be chomping people shit. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah. I really liked that scene, and it was really cute when he was teaching her.
And then the other scene, after they were fighting, and she was telling him, well, why don't you go to Sookie? Why aren't you there to help protect her? Mm-hmm. He's like, well, you know, I have to let her go. I love her and I need to let her go. And she's like, well, but I love Hoyt. And yeah. she kind of had a similar situation. So they kind of bonded over
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when Russell came and was going to chomp Jessica, I mean, he had a choice between going to Sookie or Jessica, and he chose Jessica because that's mm-hmm. his little baby. You know, mm-hmm. he got to protect her.
Well, because, yeah, because he's, I mean, you know, and but he did the right thing, though. He started appealing to Russell's ego so much as it is, you know, for a dead vampire.
Well, but it's true. He says yeah. he hide behind all them guards. The
and a baby vampire.
And a baby vampire.
That was so cute.
That was cute.
But he was kicking Bill's butt until...
Oh, Bill would have been gone.
Yeah, until Eric did
well,
what
shit,
he had
he
to
is
do.
Almost 3,000 years old. Bill's only 180 or 200.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even Eric could kick Bill's ass.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true.
Poor Bill.
I know. Bill's but true. That fight scene was... Man, that was really good.
Mm-hmm. That I like
was
that.
Really, really good. So, Sookie did real good. But you know what? Okay. I know we will get into our emails, but... one of our emailers said, is Sookie stupid or what? And I agree. I'm getting real tired of her being so stupid. Bill done already almost killed you. And everything, you know? I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Well, like she told Tara in that scene, I get it. I don't think we're going to be together, but I can't turn off my heart
yeah,
that quickly.
Well, I like Tara, though, in this episode.
Hey,
she was feisty.
Killed my ass, I think my heart would have been turned off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then that whole,
I'd have been through.
That whole discussion, she said, well, I'm just as ruthless as him.
That's true.
And I guess that's where she kind of
well,
justifies.
I'm just like him.
I'm just as deadly as him.
Yeah.
What I can do with my mind is every
exactly.
bit as deadly. And I was like, what? No,
what?
It's not.
Well, but, you know, maybe it is.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it is. But, I mean, you know, she knows she has that white light. And now she has an inkling of where it at least came from. And maybe she's coming into just a little bit of awareness of, well, maybe I've got some other things, some other strengths and stuff. See, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
But I don't care. I do not trust Bill. He's up to something. And yeah, he might care about her and stuff, but the fact is he had that file on her, and he had it hid.
Yeah.
Which means that he didn't intend for nobody to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So something sneaky up with Bill. See,
and
I don't
I
like that.
I really love the scenes, again, with Tara and Lafayette.
Oh, man.
And Lafayette trying to, you know, rub her feet and do stuff for her and telling her she could stay with him. Everything. Mm-hmm. I really like that scene.
I like that, too, because, you know, and I have a feeling that if for some reason Tara would have felt comfortable and just maybe mentioning something, I think Lafayette would disclose to her what really happened to him when he was in that dungeon and he told people he was off gambling.
Yeah.
See, I think he will. Because he'll feel like, well, you know, then it's safe for me
we
to tell her.
Both have similar situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
So, you know. But yeah, I like them two together, though.
This episode had a lot of poignant scenes to it.
It really did.
That, and then when Tara went to work and she finally just broke down with Sam. And that's kind of how you would do in real life when someone says, what's wrong? How are you, you know, what's going on? You kind of just go,
Well, she was, you know, breaking that true blood and stuff. And I mean, she was just, you could tell she was just looking over her shoulder, even though in her mind, she believes Franklin is gone and dead, but she's just jittery, you know. But one thing I noticed, though, I'm just thinking about it now. She does not seem to be jittery or any kind of negative feeling around Jessica.
Well, we really didn't see her and Jessica together.
Well, but she was in the bar tending.
No, Jessica wasn't even at work.
Jessica was waiting tables.
No, she wasn't. She was at home with Bill. Fighting werewolves.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right. Okay.
She wasn't even there.
When those hotshot folks came in, yeah.
Well, okay. She doesn't know. I mean, yeah, she Tara was there.
Yeah, Tara was there. That's true. Okay, I'm getting it mixed up. Well, we know that they shapeshift because your whole clue was when Sam starts sniffing. And then Tommy says, ooh, you smell that? So you know that they are some kind of shifters. And, you know, a woman who reads the books already told me what they are in the books. So anyway, but.
But, I mean, you could tell because that was the whole him sniffing the air when Melinda came by the house.
Yeah. Oh, that was so funny. When he opened that door and that big-eyed dog sitting there, I knew it was her.
He was so cute.
I knew it was her, though.
Yeah, I did, too.
I knew it was her.
I thought she was going to bite him or something.
No, she was wanting sympathy.
She got up and was like,
Yeah, she was wanting sympathy.
Hi. But when she walked in the house, she saw them scars on her back.
Just like Tommy. But, yep. But she said, you know, she was in that arena too.
Yep.
So, you know.
So.
But we know we haven't seen the last of them.
No. The Mickens, Oh. And you know what? I apologize if someone wrote this and I didn't. I don't remember who it was who wrote this down either on Twitter or on our Facebook page or in an email. But do you remember, do you know who Tommy is? The guy playing Tommy?
Who?
Do you know what show he was in before?
Probably not.
Because I've been seeing him the past.
Is it something season. That I would watch?
Yeah, you did watch it.
Okay.
It was a show that's not on anymore.
Okay.
But I've been watching him going, I know that kid from somewhere. I know him from somewhere.
Where?
He was LJ from Prison Break.
That's not the same guy.
Yep.
That is not the same guy.
Yep, but he had more hair.
LJ was taller and skinnier.
No, he wasn't.
That just not.
Well, up against Sam, we don't know how tall he really was.
Well.
But he was Lincoln's son on Prison Break and Wentworth Miller's nephew. By the way, where the hell is Wentworth Miller? Fine as Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell. Yeah. Fine as
where
Dominic
they
Purcell from Prison Break.
Where they at? They need
they
to
be
in
something. Hello.
Because they are too cute.
Well, I've liked Dominic, whatever, however you pronounce
Dominique.
It. Dominic. Since John Doe. Remember that show?
Yep, I remember John Doe. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But anyway, that's what show he was
I'm going to have to look that up.
Go look it up.
I'm gonna have to Google him
look it up.
And see if that's in his credits because he doesn't even look like.
Anywho.
Anyway, okay.
So,
but I do like the actor playing Tommy, though.
Yes, but him breaking down, I was like, oh my goodness, because you know he loves his mama, even though he don't like all that stuff.
Exactly.
He
that
don't
is
want
his
her
mama.
To be gone.
That is his mama. But it seems to me though that ever since Sam came back from Mississippi or wherever they was, the Mickens. Yeah, he was in Mississippi. They were in Mississippi.
No, they weren't.
Yeah, they were.
You mean when he found them?
Yeah, when he found them.
Oh, they were in Arkansas.
Oh, I thought it was Mississippi. Yeah. Anyway, okay. But it seems like to me that every episode he gets darker and darker as a character, meaning he gets... You know, his anger comes out more and more and more.
Well, he should be cussing a lot lately.
Yeah, but I mean...
I think he's really
angry
mad after he saw save Tommy from that dog ring.
Yeah.
And saw the danger they were putting their son. They love, quote unquote, that he's in his mind, that they love so much their son, but they're putting him through all that.
Yep.
He's like, oh, hell no.
Yep.
He's going to do what he needs to do to protect Tommy.
But that was funny when she said, this money ain't going to get us very far. He said, I don't give a F where y'all go. How far y'all go? You getting out of here? I had to roll that one back, though, because I liked it.
I know, I did, too, because I don't give a fuck where y'all go.
And, ooh, Alfre Woodard. Lord.
Alfre.
I love her. She is too funny.
Alfre.
She is too funny in this episode.
Again, this is only the second episode with her.
And she just...
And in... What, 3-4 minutes? She stole the scene.
I know she's just bigger than life.
I love her.
But she had me dying though. But see, this is what I say. Okay, she might be crazy and all that, but she sees stuff and knows stuff because she said, "I'm here to protect you from." And she was
Matter of fact.
No, she was spot on, though. She was perfect. From the vampires and the werewolves.
Witches.
And stuff. But then she had to say, and the dogs and cats. Uh-huh. Well, now, we know they're shapeshifters, so maybe that's what she meant. But, you know, it sounds crazy to other people. So, and then another thing. When Lafayette was telling him that, well, when he was 5 years old, that's when his mother told him that he was really special. And he could, like, breathe underwater. He says, so, you know, I tried it and I almost drowned. Uh-huh. But I think this is the interpretation I'm getting. I think Ruby Jean knows information about Lafayette. I think Lafayette's got some kind of power. I don't mean like Sookie has or anything, but he's got something. He has some kind of power or ability or something. And that I think whatever it is, that's probably the same thing in Tara's lineage that draws Franklin to her, other than the anger and stuff too. But anyway, but I think he just hasn't realized it, or
I mean, we don't know. Whatever. We're gonna have to wait and see.
Well, yeah, because you know, Alan Ball is doing something different. This is the first
episode that we've heard that, so we don't know. So
I think it's fascinating, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I like that. I like his whole storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then him and Jesus actually finally get together.
Yeah, that's nice too. And you know, it seems to me, though, that the way that they're doing this, I mean, it's very tender, you know, and very loving. You know what I mean? It's not like a stereotype, mm-hmm. in my opinion, anyway. So, yeah, it was good.
And, what about the scene with Terry and Arlene?
That was disturbing.
It was sweet at first.
Oh, but that was so disturbing. And yes, as soon as Renee popped up, I knew it was a dream. Of course. But that was disturbing. And what I thought was, see, that's what you get for lying
in our Terry.
Yeah, lying to sweet little Terry.
But I will say, I love that character.
Renee.
I
know.
I love the character. Even though he had to die, I love the character. And I like the guy who does that character.
Uh-huh.
And I just love the way he talks.
I know. Well, okay. There's a person in my office who claims, anyway, and I say claims because, you know, there's no proof. But he claims that he knew early on in the first season that Renee was the killer because his accent was so forced. And I said, I thought his accent was pretty good. He said, oh, no, it was so forced.
Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought he was good because, you know. I know,
there's some people who don't, heaven forbid, those blasphemy, that don't like True Blood.
I know.
And their excuse for not liking it when I say, mm-hmm. what the hell's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Is the accents. I just can't get past the accents.
Oh, I think they're good.
I'm like, do y'all not know? We live in Texas. Y'all know some people who talk like that. Even worse.
You know, one time my car broke, so I had to take the DART train all the way downtown, which is like, you know, public transportation. But anyway, and there are people that talk like that.
Yeah.
People,
or even worse,
that talk like that every day, and all you have to do is sit there on any kind of public transportation in any big city in the South, and you'll hear these people talk like that.
So yeah, so I don't like when people talk about the accents are off and this and the other.
That's what he was doing.
Come on now, look, you're supposed to just watch the show for watching the show. You don't need to get into all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I love that actor, and I like the way he talks. And when it happened, I was like, oh, Renee. I was like, uh-oh. Oh, he's trying to say that baby going to be evil.
Oh, you know it's going to be evil.
Or it's just her subconscious trying to make her feel like, okay, evil. This is Renee's baby. It's going to be evil or something. So
did they, let's see. Was this the episode, did you go over Hoyt?
Hoyt, and Tommy almost fighting.
Yeah. Whoo, Lord, I don't think he's going to make it with the Chatty Cathy, though.
And then at the end of the episode, we see Jessica tearing Gus up. Remember that werewolf that was chasing
her?
Oh,
yeah, Don Swayze. Yep. Don Swayze's character.
She's
chomping on him. Mm-hmm. Yep. She's chomping. I don't know if he's dead or not. I hope she don't kill him, though, but I don't know if he's dead or not.
Yeah, I don't know either.
See, so we won't know that, but...
But I think that was... Isn't that it? Did we cover every character?
I think so. What was Jason doing in this episode?
Oh, him and Crystal got together.
Yeah, I don't really like her.
She's growing on me. I liked her better in this episode.
She's not growing on me yet.
But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. She needs to go. Yeah, okay, well, I guess that's it.
We got a couple of voicemails and a bunch of comments. So let me play those.
Okay, great.
Hi, ladies. This is Paco the Cat. I have been listening to your podcast for, I would say, the past few months, and I've been trying to catch up with all of the episodes. I started watching True Blood around the second season, and I got the DVD for the first season and loved it, and finished the second season. Now I am completely hooked. I do listen to other True Blood podcasts, but yours is the best. Your podcast is the one that I look forward to. I listen to it while I'm driving most of the time, and my kids are always in the back seat going, "Mom, why are you laughing? Mom, what are you talking about? Who are you talking to?" Because, you know, whenever you guys say something, I go, "Oh, that's right," you know, and I'm having these conversations. I know no one in my life who watches True Blood, so this is my escape. Watching True Blood and then listening to you guys talk about it. I love it. Love it. Keep up the good work. I love Eric. I feel sorry for Bill. And Sookie is one of the most annoying lead characters of a television show that I have, you know, have ever watched. I thought Carrie from Sex and the City was annoying. I thought Buffy in like season 7 was annoying, but Sookie takes the cake. And I hope they write her better later in later episodes, because I can't like her. Part of me just does not like her, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that how they write Tara and how she's treated sometimes, it just upsets me. So it may have a lot to do with that. I don't know. But love your podcast. Keep up the good work. You guys rock. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Paco the Cat. What's up with that name? But anyway, thank you for that voicemail. That is really, really good. And yeah, we're glad that you find it entertaining. And, you know, I'm so sorry you don't have anybody to discuss True Blood with.
That's just awful.
Yeah, that's just awful. But you can always leave us a voicemail and we'll talk back and forth.
Yep. Or send us an email so we can email you.
Yeah, and we'll discuss it.
Yeah. First of all, what the hell is Paco the Cat? Is that supposed to be like Paco, the name of a cat? Or... I don't know.
That's anyway, funny. But you know what? You are the second person that has that I have heard that said that they love True Blood, but they cannot stand the Sookie character. That they do not like her.
She's not the second. She's like the fifth, sixth, seventh, okay. Eighth.
Well, I mean, for me, and you know, I mean, I don't mind her and stuff. And I know the story revolves around her, but she's not my favorite character either. So you know, by far, Lafayette is my favorite. And then comes Eric. You know.
I think that's what makes the show so good, is that you have a main character that doesn't have to be the center of every single thing in every episode, which is what I think I like the most about True Blood.
Yep.
Is that, she's the main character and all the stories are going to revolve around her, mm-hmm. but she doesn't have to be in every scene. She doesn't have to be in every...
Right.
The most parts of the episode.
And a lot of times when they write a series based on a main character, all the other characters are not as well drawn as the main character. But right. True Blood has very strong... Tara is just awesome. So is Lafayette, his whole backstory. But Jessica is just wonderful. I mean, her whole backstory and how she got turned and now, you know, Bill's her maker. I mean, it's just really, really good, I think.
Yeah.
All the characters. And then, like, you know, season by season, like in second season, we learned a lot of background information on Eric, so it really made you really like Eric even more.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to see his maker and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a real good series.
So thank you for sending that voicemail. And she, Paco, Cat, whatever, actually sent this in...
one day.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We've been kind of late. But I hope when you're driving with the kids in the car, you have headphones on. Because sometimes we get kind of salty.
Yeah.
So,
with our language, so yeah. we don't mean to, but hey, it is explicit.
It is explicit.
Okay, did we have another one?
We have another voicemail, and this one is from Denise.
Oh, hey, Denise.
Okay. Hold on, let me play it.
Hey, sisters, it's Denise, and I don't think this is the last we've seen of Mama Micken. I think she's going to be back. I think Jesus is the reason Lafayette's mom showed up. I think he had something to do with it. I don't think it was his nurse, as he claims, because he mentioned he didn't think Lafayette was going to call the hospital and inquire about what happened. So I think he's the one who sent Ruby there or set her loose 20 blocks from the place or whatever. And then he conveniently showed up to rescue her, quotation marks. And I also cannot wait to find out what Russell is going to do when he finds out what happens to Talbot. I love them in the study and Russell asking Talbot if his diamond slippers were chafing. We're not going to get that anymore, but we're going to get crazy Russell because he is going to lose it. All right, ladies, love the show and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, I love that voicemail. Thank you, Denise. I'd be let him lose 20 blocks from the house or something. Yeah. But you know what?
I didn't think about that.
Until you mentioned it, Denise, I never even thought about that. It was a setup maybe by Jesus. Because I did wonder, well, daggum, how'd Ruby Jean get way out there by herself?
How'd she get there?
Yeah, how'd she get there?
We had another... person who emailed about that.
Okay.
But, yeah, I didn't think about it until they mentioned it because
yeah.
I'm just thinking, okay, a nurse she escaped. Let her go. Yeah. A lenient nurse let her go.
And maybe somebody gave her a ride or something because, you know, it is a small town. Yeah. So, you know.
But maybe that was Jesus's way of getting back in
with Lafayette
after going ballistic about the V and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, something ain't quite right with Jesus.
Something ain't kosher.
He's cute, though.
He is.
Really
and then,
cute.
You're right. That the whole King Russell and Talbot interaction back and forth.
I know.
And you can see the love, but then you can also see them bickering back and forth.
Just like couples do, see.
Who've been together forever.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Poor
so
Talbot.
That's going to be gone.
I know. But yeah, I agree with you though. Can't wait to see what King Russell does. Ooh. He's one of my favorite characters.
He is.
And he is going to be mentally off because he is going to be so hurt.
He's going to be pissed.
Well, he's going to be mad, but he's going to be
and
hurt
he's
though.
Too old and ruthless to be pissed, you know?
Yeah.
Too old and too ruthless. Okay, well, let me read. We had several emails.
Okay.
And actually, one I just want to mention. I'm not going to read it because she posted it on our Facebook page, the email. But, hey, Yinks, thanks for your two emails.
Okay.
They were great. And if anyone wants to read them, they were on our Facebook page about 2 weeks ago
because
we're a little late.
Yep.
And she had a lot to talk about on this episode as well.
Okay.
Our next email is from Phyllis.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, please forgive me for the long email, but I was excited about writing and I got a little carried away.
Look at that.
Ladies, I love your podcast. I read somewhere a fan made the comment that they were True Bloods bitches. And after the episode where Tara bashes Franklin's head in, I was thinking the exact same thing. I love this show.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say that I am not a book reader and I probably will not read the books because I'm being told the books are not as diverse as the television show.
Right.
I was also told that the books are all first person from the point of view of Sookie. And let me tell you that Sookie is not the reason that I have fell in love with this show.
Mm-hmm.
The last episode recap, you guys talked about the vampire integration story of the first season. The last, this was a different angle that was very interesting to me because most vampire shows or movies are all about the highly sexualized vampire and the gothic love story that goes with it. Even though True Blood has these elements in them, they also have other characters and storylines that draw you into the show without having to give a rat's fig about Sookie and Bill.
And we just talked about that, see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first time I watched the show, I was struck with how diverse the universe was. Mm-hmm. There were only two African-American cast members at the time, joined by Eggs, but their stories felt so rich, and they were more than just loyal sidekicks. Mm-hmm. I was also struck by some of the not great elements that I wasn't so crazy about. Some racist attitudes and themes, but I appreciated how the writers were not afraid to address these issues head on and be a little controversial about it. They don't always say the right things, but they sure do make you think. I've been tested this season because I hate to say this, but I felt a little uncomfortable at seeing she calls him Lafayette and Jesus kiss. Mm-mm. I think it was because both actors say they are straight and the scene was so awkward.
Oh, I thought it was.
But I had to check myself and ask myself why seeing two men of color kiss made me feel weird. I watched Queer as Folk with no problem. I love the flirting and romance that lead up to the kiss, so the actual kiss, and I'm sure sex scenes that are to follow, should not make me feel uncomfortable. Sisters, I even have a relative that is gay, and we are very close. He says I'm just a repressed Christian. He may be right, but I think if the buildup had been less awkward, I would have felt less weird about it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, ladies, this show makes me take a deeper look at some things. It's just not mindless entertainment, even though it has that element also. Let me stop there. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. I thought it was very well done. I thought the way they led up to the kiss was really cute. And I liked it. I mean, I didn't feel uncomfortable at all.
I kind of cringed for a minute.
Why?
I don't know. I kind of cringed for a minute. And also, remember back on the... I think it was the second episode when Bill and Sam were getting ready to kiss. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the first episode, actually.
It was a dream, yeah.
It was a dream, and they were getting ready to kiss. And I was like, no. I don't know. I think it's because I find them cute and sexy. I don't know.
It didn't bother me at all. But I thought it was
she brings
very
up
well
a good
done.
Point of why do we feel that is uncomfortable?
Well, why do y'all?
I don't know. That's
because I don't. I didn't feel the least bit uncomfortable. It's just, I mean, it's not a big deal to me.
Well, after watching it several times, I watched it and was like, okay, whatever. But the first time I watched it, I was like,
really?
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
No. Okay. Well, when I was a kid, I mean, I had a gay cousin growing up too. And, you know. In the hometown, little town I was in, a whole bunch of guys would dress up in drag every Friday night and go to this barbecue joint. So, you know.
Well, I mean, and I have...
it just isn't a big thing to me. And I know gay couples who, you know, have children and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're regular people.
I agree. I'm not saying that they're not regular people. And I'm not saying that I have anything against that. I'm just saying when I saw that, and I don't know if it's because I think... Lafayette and Jesus, the characters are cute.
Yeah, they are cute.
What? I don't know what it was, but I was like, no, okay.
Okay.
Okay,
didn't
moving
bother
on.
Me.
She says, I think the King Russell storyline is great, but I don't know how they will be able to resolve it. Russell is too powerful to kill, and he is very smart. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, he's been working on his plan for thousands of years, and although the sexy Viking in the blue sweater can swoop around Bon Temps and Mississippi saving folks, I don't know how he's going to save his and Pam's asses because Russell owns them now. I'm thinking enemies are going to have to work together to defeat the king. Hmm. Eric, Bill, Nan, and the queen are going to have to put their differences aside for the greater good. I can't wait to see. What are your thoughts on the Comic-Con panel, and can you recommend any other podcasts from people of color? I have about 20 podcasts I listen to on a regular basis, but I hardly run across any podcast about entertainment with people of color. That's why I got so excited when I came across Sister Speak. Finally, a podcast that wasn't dismissing or beating up on the black folks on the show all the time. I'm about through with TV without pity. Love your honesty and your humor, and I love that you don't always agree. Keep up the good work. Sorry for the length, but believe me, I could go on and on about True Blood. Love y'all. And that was from Phyllis.
Well, thank you, Phyllis, for thank that you, Phyllis. Very long email.
I know you can't talk about nobody being long.
Our recap. I know. But
well, I will say this. I didn't see the Comic-Con panel, but I need to go look it up because I'm sure.
Yeah, it's probably on good. YouTube. Yeah, something.
And they had some good information. Mm-hmm. And I did send her a couple of podcasts that I knew about that were by people of color. Mm-hmm. But if you got the listeners, if y'all know of any, let us know so that we can post it because we do need to support other podcasters that.
Well, send me the links to the other podcasts by people of color.
Well, it was Denise's.
Oh, okay. I got Denise's.
And our other listener, Zach.
Oh, okay. Send me his then.
You have the frustrated grad.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I'm sure there's more. I just don't have them on my list. So,
well, I like True Blood because, of course, you know, there's diversity there. You know, and it's just not a stereotypical black person just plopped down in the middle of a story like a lot of these do. You got the sidekick that's a black one, you know, and that kind of thing. Like all the police shows now, that's the going thing. The sidekick buddy got to be the black one, you know. But I really like the fact that these people, these characters have actual lives and actual stories and actual things to do. That's what I like. And I do like the fact that they do deal with some racial stuff in True Blood. And they deal with it and move on. I mean, they don't dwell on it.
Yeah.
They don't pretend that it doesn't exist, but they portray it and then they move on. Just like all of us black folks do every day we live. You know, you address it when something happens and then you move on.
And we gonna move on to the next email.
Okay.
This one is from Miss J Squared.
Oh. Hey, Miss J Squared.
She says, hi, sisters. I'm listening to your latest podcast. And Sister J, you had me saying amen.
That's right.
About the books versus show topic.
Thank you so much.
There is a particular True Blood podcast whose name I will not mention that is hosted by a woman who cackles. She says, it sounds like cackling. On and on about the books, the books, the books. Mm-hmm. And even yells at listeners who haven't read them yet.
Really?
Demanding that they do. It's so tiresome and elitist. I may read the books after the show is over, but really, can I say to that woman, in case she listens to your podcast, I don't give a flying F about the damn books. Sorry, Sister K. Love you. Just because such and such happened in the books does not mean it will happen on the show, okay?
Amen.
Okay. Sorry, just had to get that off my chest. Some of these other podcasts are so annoying. That's why I'm so glad I have my sisters.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Anyway, sorry I haven't written in so long. I hope to write more about this upcoming episode.
Okay.
And then she gives me a link, which I will ask her if we can post.
Yeah, you better ask
a
first.
Short film that a friend of hers created with Nelson, with a pre-True Blood Nelson Ellis. It's like a little short, 3-4 minute film.
Right. I watched it and it's like.
And his voice is basically.
Well, I'm not sure if he wrote the poem or he's just reciting the poem. See, that's the only thing I didn't get from it. But, I mean, it was okay. But it looked like also it was years ago, too.
Yeah.
Because he looks pretty young.
Yep. Uh-huh. But anyway, it's interesting.
Yeah.
That's to support our fellow.
Thank you, Miss J Squared, for that email.
Fellow listeners and.
And I am so glad that you agree with me about this books versus the True Blood HBO series. Because, you know. Alan Ball repeatedly says he is doing something different.
We heard you.
Anyway, okay,
we
cool.
We heard you. Okay, our next email is from Felicia.
Hey, Felicia.
She says, greetings, sisters. I get halfway through the season and suddenly realized that I was missing one of my favorite podcasts. What was I thinking?
Yeah, what was you thinking?
I've written to you in the past and needed to catch up. So over the past several days, I've listened to all of this season's podcasts.
Oh, my.
You two have a unique chemistry that makes your show enjoyable. Love it. As for the long recaps, it's okay. I know how to use fast forward if I'm in a hurry.
There you go.
You do you, ladies. A few thoughts on this week's episode. Excuse me. Like Harpo saying, Sophia, all seed. That is one hunk of fine ass man. My compliments to casting. Also, applause for the close-up camera shot of Franklin's fangs protracting in the shower.
I know, that was good.
That was pretty good.
That was good.
It was cool how they do that, though. I want to know how they put those things
in. I don't know, but it sure looked cool.
It looks real.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much trouble brewing all around the show that I felt an uneasy sense of dread by the time it ended. Mm-hmm. What do you ladies think Eric has in mind for Sookie now that he knows about her? Mm-hmm. What do you think that Russell will do once he gets home?
Mm-hmm.
The actor is fantastic. Mm-hmm. When he felt Talbot's death, his response was frightening. Mm-hmm. As some of us say down south, Eric is in trouble.
Oh, man. I guess that means trouble.
Uh-huh. She says, is anyone in Bon Ton normal? I mean, how did that new waitress, Holly, know that Arlene was pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
Poor Arlene. She just can't catch a break lately. Is she going to opt to abort now because she's afraid to have Renee's baby?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the case, I really wish she'd come clean with Terry. As one of you said previously, the actress that plays Arlene is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I officially gave up on Sookie this week. After Bill almost kills her, she had the nerve to whip out the old bigot card on an understandably furious yet caring Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Sookie, what is we gonna do with that child? I'm now satisfied that she and Bill deserve each other, though. I'm already tired of their sex scenes. Tara nailed Sookie in the scene on the lawn, but she may just need to be a friend to let her crash and burn with Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I really want Alcee to slap Sookie on the...
slap
Sookie on the porch when she extended her weak attempt at sympathy after dragging him into that mess in Jackson. Obviously, wares aren't too bright. She guilts him into risking his life by telling him that he should save Debbie. Then after she gets what she wants, she tells him to forget Debbie. He gets in even deeper on her account to where his whole family is under threat. And now it's good luck to you, but you're on your own now, Fido. But hey, as a treat, I'm going to send you away with a little whiff of fabulous me to keep you on tap in case I need your hot hunky dumbass later. Laugh out loud. Jason Stackhouse, action hero. I love it. I'm trying to hold patient for it at the moment, but certain things about Lafayette are starting to nag at me a bit. It's just my view, but he's becoming the True Blood propaganda whore. Like everyone, I adore him, but he occasionally says or does things that don't quite seem consistent with his character. I've heard from others that in the books he was killed off early. Now that they've saved him, it's almost as if the writers use him as a vehicle to press their agendas or to lend or take credit to or from another character. I suppose it's their show and that's fine, but not if what he's saying or doing doesn't even seem right coming from him.
Okay. I don't get that. I don't know what she's referencing.
Okay, let me finish and then we'll talk about it. Next week, really worried about my boy Eric. What a man. I love the way that he's prioritized his agenda and is seeing it through. Family, vamp order. Then and only then will he look to salvage whatever important value Sookie may have. Till next time, sisters, have a fantastic week, Felicia.
Okay, well, I'm not really clear what you're referencing with respect to Lafayette. Unless you're talking about, I don't have a clue. I don't know. I don't feel that they are putting like political type words or an agenda in his dialogue. I don't feel that way. So I'm not really clear, you know, what it is you mean. What do you think?
I was thinking maybe she meant, I don't know either.
Yeah, see.
The only thing I can think of is...
Email us back and clarify, Felicia.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think of was maybe they're using him as a vehicle to show a gay lifestyle.
But that doesn't quite... I don't think that's what she means.
But that doesn't quite fit either with what she means.
I don't think that's what she meant. We're kind of puzzled in that one.
I don't know what else, because, I mean, he's an ex... prosty, hustler, drug dealer, but he really cares about his mama and is going to pay for her mental care and all this stuff. So, I don't know. He's got so many facets to him that it makes it hard to know what specifically
I'm not clear.
She's talking about. Oh, I forgot. She also PS's, how did Felton know who Tommy was? I want to wish the best for Tommy, but he didn't just change overnight. I think something funky is up with him, the Mickens, and the Hotshot crew. And Sam will pay the price for his benevolence.
Well, they could smell each other. Well, so they know what each other
Felton
is.
Felton knew what Tommy's name because Sam said it. True. While he was trying to stop Tommy from fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Felton just used it to mock him. So that's basically it. But great email. Thank you.
And
then let us know what you were talking about.
Yeah. Clarify for us, please.
So we can talk more about it. Okay. Our next email is from Mr. J. And he says, hey, sisters.
Hey.
Just a few lines this week in response to a question y'all were asking a couple of podcasts ago and some thoughts on this last episode. First, the question about why Arlene was so convinced Jessica would want to eat her even more because she was pregnant. I think y'all forgot her kids were up in the middle of Fangtasia with Eric and Pam.
That's true.
Sam took them there to help Eric deal with Marianne. Eric said something about liking children. I think that's where they probably got the idea that kids were a special treat for vamps. Now some thoughts. How great is it that Bill finally started training Jessica? Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
That Bill is much more likable than the lame absentee father Bill. I hope they continue to have a more productive relationship. Feisty Tara is back. Thank goodness.
Yes, Lord.
I love that she called Sookie out for being stupid. Then again, Sookie kind of called herself out first. I think Sookie is right. She and Bill aren't all that different. I'm going to have to jump on board the something is weird about Jesus train. That whole exchange between Jesus Lafayette and Mama was odd. What kind of power does Lafayette have? Mm-hmm. Something fishy is going on.
That's what I'm saying.
I know Eric didn't kill Talbot. What?
Uh-huh.
Russell is going to be pissed.
Man.
Well, at least Talbot was somewhat happy in the end. What a way to go, right? Debbie Pelt is a super bitch. What a crazy... A great, crazy villain.
Mm-hmm.
The fight between her and Sookie was awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what happens now that Sookie slashed her face. Mm-hmm. Who's going to get cut now, Debbie? I really didn't need to see Bill and Sookie screwing at the end. Did she not listen to a thing Claudine warned her about?
Yep.
I keep telling myself she's just a girl who recently lost her virginity, but damn. Tara is right. She's acting stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Is Holly a psychic? I guess I will end with props to the actor playing Tommy. It was so sad when he cried after his mama left. It was my favorite scene in the episode. Mm. Funny, remember back at the beginning of the season when I didn't like that storyline?
Yep.
Well, I hope y'all are well, and I look forward to the next podcast. You're the best, Mr. J.
Oh, thank you for that email, Mr. J. And you know, yeah, I really like that scene, too. My favorite scene, though, was the girl fight. But I really like that scene of Tommy crying over his mama. Because, you know, that was very, very heartfelt. So, yeah.
And Debbie is a good little villain.
She really is.
And I like that they actually had her somewhat cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And still pissed. And,
but my question was, since how the wolves ran into the house, how come she come skipping down the lane in human form? Why didn't she just, you know, transform into a wolf and jump on
Sookie? Didn't want to. She wanted to fight her. Woman a woman.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know? She wanted to talk shit first.
Yeah.
You know? And she did, too.
Yeah, she did.
She wanted to talk shay-shay first. Mm.
Okay.
Okay, our next email is from Janelle.
Hey, Janelle.
She says, hey, guys. So let me start by saying that was the best freaking episode ever. The Sookie-Bill breakup was good, and the makeup was so great that I can look past the fact that at the first opportunity, Sookie went back to Bill.
Yep.
I love the fact that Jessica and Bill finally bonded and they see how much they really need each other. The vamp training session was so cool to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I hope there is more of that or at least some vamps fighting hand to hand.
Yeah, I like that too.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Eric's little bit of acting before he killed Talbot was priceless. Mm, and their scene still has me a bit speechless. I just wonder how he plans on getting away with it. Eric is never without a plan, so he must know what he's doing. It will probably he will probably get away with it in terms of the authority now since the magister is gone, but Russell won't let it stand.
Nope.
The girl fight was awesome. It wasn't cheesy or overly choreographed. It was a real fall down, drag out, fight. Kudos. Well, I finally managed to write a short email. Take care, and I look forward to your next podcast, Janelle.
Well, thank you for that email.
Thanks, Janelle.
Ooh, we had a lot of emails today.
We did. Well, wow. We were gone. We were gone for a while.
Okay.
Our next one is from Miss J Squared again.
Okay.
And because this is from a while, you know, the first one's from a while ago. She says, "I hope you're both well." The last season is. She says, "Okay, if last season was the season of the BEs, then this must be the season of the PWTs. Poe White Trash. Seriously, man. We have a meth lab." Dirty dog fighting, beer swilling, soggy draws wearing, stringy haired Mickens family, the neo Nazi vampires and werewolves, not to mention poor sad little Jason. Did y'all notice the Coors pillow in his house?
Yeah.
And don't think we didn't notice the whole slavery overtones with Tara storyline this season. Poor thing. When she had a meltdown in front of Sam at Merlot's. My boyfriend just stared incredulously, laughing, and said, "Man, she is effed up." I'm not trying to say that the writers of True Blood are racist. Obviously, they love playing up the Southern stereotypes of all ethnic backgrounds and creeds. Hmm. But can we have a strong brother or sister up in there that isn't dealing drugs, killing people, victimized, or completely batshit crazy? It is the South, after all. Just an observation, sisters. What do you think? In other news, who would have thought that the first male-on-male sex scene on True Blood would be with Eric, not Lafayette?
Exactly.
Interesting. Also, Sookie, are you slow? What part of Don't Trust Girl did you not understand?
I know it.
That vamp almost killed you, and now you're hiding, and now you're riding him like he's the last man on earth. Wow. Miss J Squared, you tore it down.
Woo, she broke it down.
Finally, can we hand Alfre Woodard her Emmy already?
That's right.
She kills it as Ruby Jean. Just kills it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And please don't let Don Swayze's werewolf be dead.
I know.
That's all for now. Love your sisters. Miss J Squared.
Yeah, we like Don Swayze, his werewolf Gus, too.
I really just do. Like seeing him, yeah. I guess.
But you know what, though? I have talked to people in my office before and some other people, too, about I love the little slavery overtones, though. But, hey, you know, because like I said before, hey, Tara should have burned that thing down.
Well, what she's saying is, you know.
I know what she's saying.
Well, I know, but what I feel that they're doing with the storyline is good because this shows what really happens in our communities.
Yep.
You start out. Your life isn't that great. You have parents that are hooked on drugs or alcohol or who don't always develop you the way parents should. And it shows kind of the vicious cycle that those kids grew up to become. Look at Lafayette. He's a good person, we know. But he also, if you look at just the paper, he's prostituting in the season one. He's selling drugs. I mean, that's kind of like the social commentary of what's going on in the community, our communities especially. So I kind of like how they've kind of incorporated all that in there.
Okay.
And I agree. We should start a campaign for Alfre Woodard to get an Emmy. Really do. Okay, our next email is from Myron.
Hey, Myron.
Hello, sisters. There are too many good lines to list, so I'm confident you will cover them all. Why do I feel like I'm watching an episode of All My Children? What kind of damn family is Russell creating? Sophie Ann in one ear and Talbot in the other.
Uh-huh.
Russell is going to be working a lot of overtime that will hopefully take him out of the house if he knows what's good for him. I know I would. Well, at least he doesn't have to hear Talbot complain about Russell not taking him anywhere anymore. I hope Eric was not acting strictly on impulse when he staked Talbot. If so, he is in trouble. And then he says, sing in parentheses. And I am telling you, I'm not going. Jessica isn't going anywhere. I kind of liked the soap opera meets Kung Fu theater scene. Poor Gus, which is the Don Swayze character. Mm-hmm. Where do they get the actress that plays Holly? She sure does look otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
Her appearance is quite distracting. Both Crystal and Jason were introduced to main characters, play on their emotions without revealing their true natures, just like Bill was introduced to Sookie. And look at what her life has become since she met him. This, I believe, will lead Jason and Lafayette down a dark path that will lead into season 4.
Yeah, could be.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Did y'all see the way Lafayette was jumping around on the balls of his feet after his mother startled him by throwing that statue on his porch? Do you think that Lafayette's family has some sort of mystical, magical powers have not been able to harness, and as a result, they have been involving themselves in counterproductive behavior patterns that has kept them from tapping into their true nature?
Could be.
Letty Mae, recovering alcoholic. Ruby Jean, crazy. Tara, codependent. Lafayette, drug dealer, slacker. I think Jesus fabricated Ruby Jean's escape. Did you see the looks Lafayette was giving him as he observed how Jesus interacted with Ruby?
Mm-hmm.
I believe Jesus did that all to get Lafayette to open up to him. If I'm right, Jesus is a master manipulator.
Hmm.
I'm not happy that we only have four episodes left. Similar to the Wares and Fang Bangers hooked on V, I am hooked on Alan Ball's True Blood, right along with my favorite podcast. And then he says, love ya, New Jersey boy. Excuse me, boy, Myron.
Oh, thank you for that email,
thank you, Myron.
That's really great.
And we already talked about a lot of that, but yes, that scene where Lafayette, when she threw that statue at him.
Mm-hmm.
And if we recall, that's the same statue that Sookie threw at
Letty Mae. Yep.
To get her to drop the gun when she was that terrorized. Rifle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I peeped that out too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. We had a couple of comments on iTunes.
Okay.
One is from MollyCat123.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I really enjoyed this podcast. Their recaps are always entertaining, even when they're long. And I love when they get going on a topic or character during the commentary. Their discussions are always interesting and funny, and I even like their playful bickering.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the audio quality on this is top-notch, especially compared to some other True Blood podcasts. Keep up the good work, sisters.
Well, that's nice. Thank you so much.
5 stars.
Yeah, cool.
And then our other one is from Mousy Wallpaper.
These names just crack me up. Okay.
Well, she names Mousy Wallpaper, but she signs it later. I love this podcast to death. It is my favorite True Blood podcast. The sisters are doing it for themselves.
Yep.
It's so good to hear women in a podcast, especially women of color.
Yep.
They are so fun and make the listening experience enjoyable. The sound quality is so good. I also enjoy their other podcasts as well.
Yay.
I suggest you give them a try. I am a huge fan of Sister J and Sister K. Keep up the good work, ladies. And also, if the t-shirt thing happens, put me down for one. A sister from Chicago named Chanel.
Oh, thank you, Chanel. You know what? Maybe
I forgot about the looking the t-shirt thing.
Maybe by Christmas time we had to do that.
Oh, before that.
Well, yeah.
Before that.
Well, I'm not going to promise, but yeah, that would be cool though.
So thank you everybody
for all the
feedback. It's been 2 weeks, so we had a lot.
Right.
So this is kind of a long episode.
We really like the feedback though. We really, really appreciate it because, you know, I mean, we would do our podcasts anyway, but it's just nice to know that your listeners like what you do and they like, you know, what you say.
Yes.
And for those of you that only listen to True Blood, then, you know, we're kind of tame, if you will, on True Blood than some of our other podcasts, especially Big Brother.
Don't beat around the bush.
So,
you are tame. You are tame on the Big Brother on True Blood podcast.
Yes. Because Big Brother got me riled.
You get riled up.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, but yeah, we do have our other podcast, and we have not decided yet what we're going to do for the fall when True Blood goes off, but we'll be podcasting something. Because V will come back then.
Yeah.
Fringe will be back then, and
we never finished those two, but we will eventually one day.
We will.
Someday in the sun. So. Saying that for how long now?
Lord, I don't know, but anyway,
we just need to quit promising stuff.
But we are going to have another True Blood podcast this week.
Yes,
probably by Friday.
The newest episode.
Friday or Saturday, look for a second episode, and that way we'll be all caught up before Sunday.
Okay, well, if y'all would like to get get in and send us an email, tell us what you think.
Yep.
It is sisterspeak@gmail.com. Our voicemail line, which is getting some work out.
Yay!
Is 972-692-7341. Our website is sistersinterview.com. And also on the voicemail, if you don't want us to play it, we won't. We'll just talk about it.
So and just tell us. And
the same thing on the email. If you don't want us to read it, we won't. Just make sure you put that down.
Right.
So that we don't read it.
So on your voicemail, you know, just, you know, say at the end or the beginning, you know, I'd rather you not play it. Yeah. It's just for y'all or whatever.
Our website is sistersinterview.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/sisterspeakpodcast. And we have been having some great commentary over there.
Yeah.
Which is great because everyone can kind of talk and see what each other is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are both on Twitter at _SisterK and _SisterJ.
Yep.
So there's a lot of ways to get in touch with us. And we love talking to everybody.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, that's it for now. I'm Sister K.
And I'm Sister J.
See you next time.